Hi, my name is Robin McCormick, and I am the Girls FCA Lacrosse Club Director. This podcast is about all things LAX. We wanted to bring you authentic, fresh, and inspiring information from coaches, players, and others in the lacrosse world, giving you the best up-to-date information in the game of lacrosse as it is evolving quickly. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. My name is Robin McCormick, and I am the Girls FCA Lacrosse Club Director. Welcome to our podcast, All Things LAX with FCA Girls. I'm excited to introduce our guest today, American University Head Women's Lacrosse Coach, Lindsay Teeters. A little bit about Coach Teeters. After four seasons at the helm of American University, she has already led the team to record-breaking success, restructuring their program, and championing a culture of success. She has been named co-head coach for the U.S. Women's Lacrosse Select U16 team, a two-time All-American from Boston University from 2002 to 2006. She brings 13 years of coaching experience, including seven on the D1 level with stops at James Madison, George Washington, and Virginia Tech, where she was promoted to associate head coach during her time there. She played Team USA from 2007 to 2009, and I'm super excited to welcome Coach Teeters. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for taking the time and joining us. Kind of jumping in, I think I wanted to just ask you, how did you first fall in love with this game?
Robin, thank you for having me today. Really excited to have a chance to chat. Lacrosse started at a very early age for me, the love of it. My uncles all played, my dad played in high school. So it was definitely a family affair from the beginning. I was very, very fortunate that I was coached by Dolores Adele, who was a wife of longtime Maryland coach Dick Adele. And she was my first coach, both in soccer, basketball, and lacrosse. And, you know, growing up, obviously, right down the street from Big Man was special. I got to play with his daughter, Erin. So lacrosse started at a young age, certainly more at the rec level. I think now, obviously, everything's more club, which I'm sure we'll touch on. But lacrosse, definitely, my love of lacrosse started very, very early. Although I think I was probably more talented in soccer than I was lacrosse. I loved it so much that there was no doubt in my mind I was going to try and pursue, the collegiate path. And then also understanding that I could possibly do this as a career moving forward.
That's fantastic. So you were a multi-sport athlete. Were there other sports that you played growing up or?
Yeah. So I rode horses when I was younger and I played soccer. That was probably the first sport that I loved and I really excelled at. Played basketball. I was fortunate that I won actually a state championship in both soccer and basketball at Glenelg High School. And before kind of McDonough took over, Chris Robinson actually used to be the head coach at Mount Hebron, which was in the same county as Glenelg. So we used to just pride ourselves when we were second in the county that we were still county champs. We didn't win a county or state championship at that time, but we still found some success on the field and had some great players come through the program.
Well, that's kind of what I've asked some of the, people who I've had on is the importance of multi-sport. Do you still find that is, or do you recommend, kids still playing multiple sports as long as possible?
As long as possible. I think the club world maybe doesn't allow it as often, even when they say that they, love multi-sport athletes, the schedule is grueling and it doesn't allow for them to really do both. Arguably our best player, on our American team right now is Reagan Murdoch. And she was an incredible basketball player. Wow. So, I think for us, it definitely the importance of playing other sports. I think basketball is one of the best ones you can play. Finola obviously is a basketball player. So I think for us, it is important that they have a background in other sports.
Yes, for sure. I do, so many people say that the game of basketball transfers over to lacrosse so easily. I think I've found, even as a coach, my best defenders are soccer players because I think soccer is a little bit more up on the ball and you're a lot of contacts being made. So defenders, soccer players typically are not afraid to kind of touch it, make that contact and be super aggressive. So anyway, well, that is fantastic. So share a little bit about, I don't know if you had siblings growing up as well, playing with you as well, kind of encouraging your journey of the sport of lacrosse and clearly your family. Share a little bit about your journey, of lacrosse for yourself.
So I'm actually one of seven kids. My parents had five kids. I sit right in the middle. So I have two older sisters, two younger brothers. Unfortunately, my dad died when I was younger, and my mom remarried, and so I have two younger stepsisters. So we thrive in chaos. I feel like that's kind of how our world at this point. Both of my older sisters played lacrosse. My younger brother, who's a year younger than me, played at McDaniel. We were the only two that played collegiately. But it was really, I think lacrosse was a family sport. And I think sports in general were just part of our lives. We loved it. We, spent a lot of time. We were fortunate that we had some acreage and always were playing in the backyard, had an incredible basketball hoop. So I think for us, we just, grew up in that sports realm. So I was the first to go to school collegiately to play. And then my brother followed suit. And I was lucky that my parents came up all the time to come to my games. My grandparents would hop on a flight too. It was when before Southwest started to fly up, AirTran used to have like $39 flights. And you could get up for the day and come back. So I was very supported in that sports world by my family.
Right. Well, and I think that's huge. We've talked a lot about the role of the parents and the role of our family, but they can definitely play a huge role in encouraging us and it being kind of the culture in which we grow up in. So, I asked Kathy Reese like what the field means to her because I feel like we spend so much time. I feel like I've dedicated my life to sports and I didn't mean to, but I feel like that's obviously where our passion, was very much in my home and my family. And my dad just thought it, I think he thought of it as a way of community and just being part of your community. And then, sometimes downtime can be a dangerous place for young kids getting into trouble. So sports are a great place, Well, thank you for sharing a little bit about that. And I think, as we're ch chatting, I really want to hear from you what you're really passionate about. And as the game is evolving, what are you seeing? So my next question for you really is, what are you most passionate about the game that you think players and parents need to know?
I think the one thing that I'm passionate about, and it translate a lot with my American team, is just the role that coaches can play, in a player's life. I sit here today. I think, I mentioned obviously Big Man and Dolores. I had an incredible soccer coach, Cliff Walcott, who understood me, as a kid. I'm a middle child, so I was fighting tooth and nail to get every attention that I could. And I think my mom can attest I was not the easiest kid. And so I think for me, it was the role that my coaches have played. Liza Shoemaker, who's now Liza Kelly, who's out at Denver, Liz Robertshaw, who was my assistant at BU. The reason why I sit here today is the role that they played, in my life. And that's, ultimately why I sit here. It's why, why I want to continue to really make an impact, in players' lives is what it's done for me, and what it continues to do for me, the relationships that I've built, and just I think the power that it can really play. So I think it's really important to understand, and that's give and take. I think I talk a lot to my players about the relationship that we can have and the relationship that we're going to build if they entrust in me and if they feel like I have their best interest. I'm going to get the most out of them. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be easy on them. It doesn't mean that I'm going to sit back and let them, kind of, they are going to make mistakes, and I will find a way to correct them, and we are going to have tough times. However, because of the relationship that I've built and the trust that they have in me, I really am able to make a difference in their life. And that's on the field, that's off the field. I think the biggest thing for me is recognizing the impact that coaches can really make in a player's life. And for me, that is why I continue to love this sport. It's why, we were talking earlier about just how much the, community that you have around you, and that extends past just your immediate family is, one that, you'll take with you, and it really will make an impact on your life for, years to come. So I think it's recognizing, obviously we talk a lot about the impact that players can have, but I think the most part is the impact that coaches can really have on a player. And that's why, I sit here. It's why I'm, excited to continue to see, my program grow. I'm just thankful that I've had the opportunities, presented to me over the years.
Yeah, I think as you speak about cultivating like trust with your players, and because they're young women and they're just experiencing life out in the real world once they come to you, and that trust level can really impact. I remember hearing the BC coach, head coach, Keisha Walker, like she's saying the same thing with just that importance of developing trust. And then also, as you mentioned, so my daughter, Fanola, she's going into senior year. She is going to American to play for Coach Teeters. And one of my, as a, as all the moms and fathers out there listening, like my biggest prayer through this college recruiting process was the impact of the coach that she would come under. Because I remember playing at Loyola, Diane Akins had a huge impact on me. I mean, there's certain memories like I can probably count on my hands where I literally still remember where I was, what she said. You're spending so much time with your team and your coach, and they have a huge influence on your life. And I feel very blessed and fortunate to have played under her, and all the assistance I ever was impacted by. But we had something really special, and we were able to go to the Final Four or the national championship. We lost by one goal to Maryland, but it like that, and we were able to go to Australia. Like there's so many memories with this team, and you spend so much time that you really want to be inspired by someone leading you. So, I just to give you a shout out when Fanola committed, I didn't even know, and I know you're a local person and you coached in this area for a long time, but I had people like that I didn't, I'm even associated with lacrosse, approach me and just tell me what an amazing human being you are. So I hope that you can receive that. I'm not even kidding. Like, and it just confirmed in me because that was my biggest prayer request is who's going to influence my daughter? And I'm just really feeling blessed and thankful. So thank you for offering all that. And don't mean to put too much on you, but I just wanted to share that. So yes, this game is evolving super fast. What do you see in the game changing the fastest and most, or most? Maybe it's what's moving so fast, or maybe it's just happening more and more and more. Is it good, or is it some challenges that are coming along with it? And you can talk about both the good and the challenges.
The rule changes, I think, are the biggest thing that is hard. We, as a coaching body, are able to change our rules every 2 years. And you're seeing it. You're seeing the rapid change. You're seeing us continue. And I think good and bad, right? We want to progress the sport. We want to make it great for the audience. I think as you hear feedback about lacrosse, as a beginner, it's really hard to understand as a spectator. You don't always understand the fouls. You don't understand how they're moving, what decisions are being made. So I think, changes need to be made. I think they're happening maybe a little too fast. And, I also think it's very hard because lacrosse has a lot of different disciplines. So when you look at a sport like soccer or basketball, they are the same sport at the youth level as they are at the Olympic level. Lacrosse, we have, like, my daughters played 3v3 with no goalie their first year. They then transitioned to, I think we were 6v6 this year with a goalie. But it just continues. There's just a lot of changes within and the disciplines within our sport. Now we have box, now we have sixes, we have worlds, like even the way that our world team and our national teams play is different than it is the way that our US high school and college teams play. So I think there needs to be a little cleanup there. I think some people don't like this opinion. I think that if there's a magic ball, if the Olympics does well, I think you're going to start to see our sport transition to a more sixes model. And I think that's, how do you get us on TV? How do you get, the sport to be showcased and for people to not only want to play it, but want to continue to watch it? And I think they found that's kind of where the sixes model came out of. They did the research. They, put feelers out there to figure out what was going to work best. Plus, I think from, and I'm probably going to be, I might be wrong in this, but I believe it was also the number of athletes that could come in from an Olympic level. They weren't going to, do a big football roster. So I think some of that was also a roster limit, for the Olympic committee. So I think the sport is changing very fast, and I'm interested to see how the Olympic model goes. And I've loved coaching sixes. It is a ton of fun. We've done it. U16 and U18 has now shifted. Now we're 17 and 19, and then obviously we have the 20, U20 Worlds, and then the senior team. I think it's just going to be really interesting to see after the Olympics what transpires and what happens. It's a really fun sport to watch, but it does reduce the number of student athletes on the field. It reduces roster numbers. But I think there's too many disciplines in lacrosse, and then there's too many different rule changes throughout each age group. And we're not men's lacrosse. So now you added a different women's soccer and men's soccer are the same. Women's basketball, men's basketball are the same. So, I think that also adds, a little bit more of a struggle when you think about how many different rules there are, especially when you're comparing men and women, and as you're looking at the different disciplines across. And box has now been added, which is incredible. I went up to Utica and had the chance to watch US women win, the box championship. So, and that's another fun sport. So there's a lot of changes in lacrosse, and just too many disciplines across, I think, across the board.
Right. That's a great point. I mean, the boy, even when back when I played, there was no boundaries, like the whole, this might educate some people that didn't know, but like the whole team, like I was, I started my career in college as like a midi defender, and then I eventually moved lower and lower. And
To a
I
point or cover
always,
point.
what's that?
To a point or cover point.
Yes. I used to be D wing. And then, so, or third man. And then, so then the whole crew could come down, like all players could come down to the 12. And, I was able to score and, be a defender and kind of play a little offense. So definitely little every year, it seems like these couple rules are added, and kind of making it what it is. Some are exciting and some are kind of like, oh, what are there any rules this year that are up, like that are concerning you or that are you're excited about change that you've heard about this year?
I'm a mixed bag right now. I feel like I need to see some of, because I know we're in this transition of a rule change year. We typically test them out in the fall, and then that gives us a better
Idea.
understanding. We did that last year. We tested a lot of them in the fall. I honestly feel like I don't know enough yet to make a decision on which ones I like and which ones I don't. And I feel like, even thinking about ones that I previously didn't love, like the green card, I think it got better as these last 2 years have gone on. So, ones that maybe I was upset about in the beginning, I, don't mind as much now. It'll be interesting to see how the green card and scenario happens outside of the 30. I know that that's one that's so the 1 minute penalty that is now assessed. So we're doing a lot more man up, man down.
Right.
A little bit
What
of
about the,
everything.
have they said anything about the reviewing like fouls and things like that? Because I know that extended game times a
It
lot this
did.
spring. And so.
Well, it was interesting because I spoke with our assigner and Julie thought that maybe that sheet, I think it had 16, would maybe reduce, and now it looks like it's going to add more. So, the hard part is some schools still don't have video review. So there's, the top programs certainly have video review. We're getting it put in right now. So we'll have it for next year. But that's the other thing with the spectator side of things. We're being told that it's better to have a game that's under 2 hours. You're more likely to keep an audience if that game cap is 2 hours and the review does increase it. So, I think the hard part is like anything, and this is where you see it in other sports. Refs are human. They're going to make mistakes. They're not expected to make every decision the right way. So I think it's just the human nature that it's going to continue to happen. And I just don't know how many more rules we can put in to review, because I think it's getting to be too much.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's some obviously pros and cons to all of it. I think the when we go into tournament play and there's no shot clock and the whole stalling and it's like, oh gosh, I'm so glad this shot clock is now within because it does speed up the game and it's
It
like you
does.
have to watch a team like run around with the ball for, 5 minutes. So there are some good things, some things that are still, I guess, out there for review. But so talk to me a little bit about your time with the US. And this is kind of maybe the back end of that is why would you encourage young athletes to go out and try out for US?
Great question. So being involved with the US system early on in my career and having a chance to wear Team USA was an incredible honor. And then being asked to be part of this U17 and U19 development program has been, it's been so much fun, to play and, or not play, to coach some of the greatest, lacrosse players that are coming up through, to think that there's an opportunity that I've coached a few that could be on the Olympic team is an incredible honor. I think the biggest thing and why I would encourage players to at least just try out is I've never faced anything harder than a Team USA tryout. I've never. I mean, physically and mentally demanding. I still look back at that time. We still, even on the sidelines of a lot of the coaches that I played with and tried out with. We talk a lot about that time and those 3 days or 4 days and my feet and me having to put Vaseline all over my feet and just, wanting to just keel over at moments. Like it truly was, the hardest thing that I physically had to do. So I think it's great to put yourself in that situation where you can try out and do something really hard, and be in an environment with, again, some of the greatest lacrosse players to ever play the game. And to stand next to them is unreal to be able to, be on the offensive end or defensive end or be on the draw circle with, some of the greats are, it's a moment you'll never forget. And it's one that, pushes you to the limits. So I would encourage everybody, to just try to do the regional tryouts to see. The regional tryouts obviously are a little bit different than combine. So obviously you're always working, but it's also an honor just to try out and to be part of it. And if you do get to that combine, it's just preparing like physically and mentally, that it's going to be, one of the most grueling things that you've ever had to do. And it's I truly, I love being around it. I love seeing the players just play at such a level. It certainly fills my bucket of, getting a chance to compete and play at that high of a level.
Wow. Who was coaching you at that time for US? Who was
So
in?
I went through the transition of two different coaching staff. So I think Ricky ended up taking over at one point, but it was Sue Stahl. It was
She still is a legend. I mean,
I
from
know, I know.
I was planning like ODU. She was
Go to
ODU,
you.
then she did US.
I played against her at BU. We played ODU at Temple, and I want to say it was like my sophomore or junior year. And we went down there, and I just remember being so intimidated, not by her team, but by her.
Yeah, her presence. Oh,
Her,
yeah. I
yes.
know. My dad was really, he loved ODU and he was really kind of wanting me to go there. And I was like, I don't know. I was, she kept intimidating.
Sue Heather was part of the staff then. It just it introduced me, and then I was fortunate. I actually left college coaching for a little bit. This profession is hard when you are young. You miss out a lot on certain activities. I think I missed out on some weddings and baby showers and girls trips and, because the schedule is tough. And I was fortunate enough that that one year that I decided to leave college coaching, I actually worked for the national teams, and got a chance to, kind of see the other side of it and work with all four of the national teams at that time. So U20 for both boys and girls, and then the two senior teams. So it gave me a fresh perspective. So again, the connection that I have with, USA Lacrosse kind of continues to go throughout, and a lot of the relationships that I've built and just the people that I've met. And I think there's been some really great transition there. That facility is beautiful. I kind of wish that maybe the stands are a little bit bigger because I think they can fill it. So I think, that's kind of the next phase is like, how do you continue to, build that facility to make it in, to continue to be a premier place that team, even college teams want to go and play. But it's, that field is special. There's something about it. You walk on the field and you just, I don't know. I get goosebumps when I walk on it. I never actually had a chance to play on it because at the time that I was playing Team USA, they didn't have the facility yet, so we were still next to Hopkins. But it's there is something really special about getting a chance to wear red, white, and blue and be part of something that's so much bigger than you and even your teammates.
For sure. And no, that field is super special. That's where Maryvale was able to win the national, championship this year. And they do have space on the opposite side. I
They
feel like they
do.
could start to, build that place up. But for you, like playing US and then being able to give back. And then I do feel like as the sport evolved, just wanting to encourage kids to go out and try out and give it a go. You never know. If you have that incredible drive, anything's possible. So
Yes.
that's why I was excited to have you on to be able to talk about US, the idea that we are going to be in the Olympics. I mean, there's a lot happening and it's very exciting, especially for the girls' side. Recruiting. So this can be fun to talk about, but yeah, I mean, educating our parents and our players as much as possible about the recruiting process. It is constantly evolving as well. What is important to know? Top things on your list to know that you would consider. These are top things. I think kids should really be paying attention to this and understand, and just to understand the whole recruiting process. So.
I think it's understanding that certainly the summer from sophomore to junior year, it is the most important summer, and that can be hard. We had a player that had torn their ACL and missed that entire summer and fall as you go into fall. However, I think the most important thing is and I think I've been talking actually. Meg Dowdy and I were just on the phone the other day. You can only do so much. And I think one of the important things and factors to really consider is even though this is the most important time, it does not mean that you have to fill your calendar from June until July 31st. And I think what we found, Meg played at Maryland, was a, all world defender. Sometimes it's a little too much, and these kids are being they're exhausted by the end of July. And it actually, the problem is some of them aren't showcasing their skills because they're so exhausted. So I think just being, although yes, this is a really valuable and important time, it doesn't mean that you have to do it all. And I think that's where you come in, where you have to find the best showcases, the best camps and clinics to go to. And it's then really important for you to have people, whether it's, someone like you who is the director and talking with some of the individuals, players that you have on your team, and having some very honest conversations about, go to this showcase because this has the level of coaches that maybe are a little bit more of your fit. And I think the parents need to really hear it. The girls need to really hear it. And it might be disappointing. You always want to shoot for the stars. I use this analogy a lot because I think I've looked at UNC. That was on my list. Who doesn't? Everybody looks good in baby blue. The problem is UNC isn't going to take everybody. So, there's times where, yes, you want to shoot for the stars, but you also need to be a little bit more realistic. And if you can do that, then you're not going and spending so much money, on, seven different showcases throughout the summer. Let's really sit down, have some honest conversations, use the people that are going to give you honest feedback, and try to find the best places for you to go, and not burn yourself out. And I think that's hard because some people don't have recruiting directors. Some people might not have a high school coach that, it understands the process and understand what is going on. So I do think it's hard because then at that point, who are you relying on? Who are you communicating with? And how do you get that honest feedback? But my hope is that, the more the club grows and the more we can educate as coaches, people can find and choose the right showcases, camps, clinics to attend in order to give them the best chance. And I think it's also hard because everyone glorifies Division One. My brother played Division Three and had an incredible experience. So it's I think that's my niece right now is down at Tampa, playing Division Two and just won a national championship. And I think she's somebody she didn't see the field this year. I think she played in one game. And when you talk to her about her experience, she lights up. So I think, yes, Division One, gets the glory. But there's a lot of great lacrosse being played, and there is a lot of incredible programs. And I don't think, people have to just try to continue on this path of looking just at Division One or going to, all of these showcases that are expensive and not really giving you the best platform to perform and to show you. I think there's some showcases that have 200 players. You can't see 200 players. You can't. Like, even for me, we try to get to as many games as possible, but there's only so much time. So some of the smaller events, might be a great avenue for some of these 27s and obviously looking ahead, 28s, 29s, when you can get into some of these smaller events, it's a great way for them to really showcase their skills. But I think it's just there's a lot, there's too much. And even for us as coaches, we can't get to everything. And that's been hard this summer. I feel like my schedule I thought was going to be like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. And it's been a crazy summer. And I feel bad because I am some of the players in the 27, group, my notes literally are they just tired? Like, question mark, because they don't look as good as they did in June as they, right now.
Right. Do you rely on film then to, like, if you're looking at a kiddo and you're, because I feel like that takes good discernment. I mean, coaches have to know this. Like, if you saw a kid and they look like a rock star in the fall, they're looking kind of fatigued now. And then you go kind of balance it with some film, like that was my heart. So for the 26s, it was such a stressful summer. I mean, I remember Summer Genesis, like they were playing a really good team, probably well beyond our rankings. I think the tournaments are really working hard to try to keep it within the rankings now. they just I was so sad for them because, some of them were on the sideline crying. That's not the kind of kid they were. Like, it was just so much pressure. It was midsummer. They were just breaking down. And I was like, oh my gosh. And there were so many coaches there. And I'm just, I mean, we did. We took a knee and as a team, we prayed. I mean, at that point, I felt like I was in a battle that only God could help us in because this summer, and fall, we had a blast. I've never seen our 20 as good as they did. And some are looking at two and D2 and three, and so they're still showing, but the pressure was less, and they just played well, and it was just fun to be, So I don't know if eventually they'll reconsider this sophomore into junior, and it's just this smush summer because I tend to notice the guys is more drawn out and it's like a longer process. I don't understand where that comes from. And, I guess it's a time management thing too. Like, hey, we're looking one season, we're looking at this, the next season. I'm not sure. And, like you said, as a club and a director, we're trying to, we've built our portfolio of tournaments to a place that I'm really proud of, and we're going to be at, the tournaments we need to be at for these kids to get recruited, and I'm excited about that. But they do need to do some other things, like maybe some individual stuff, like some of our players are playing this weekend, American Select and All American, and there's opportunity like that, best in class, some things like that. But then, like you said, there's also where a school is hosting, maybe there's six coaches coming and it's a smaller venue. And, maybe it's not, it's local, so you don't have to pay for a hotel. I mean, there's things that weigh in that make all these decisions between a parent and a player that like, you really need to think out your summer and like plan it out, make sure it's financially doable. I just don't think don't let it sneak up on you and then, oh no, we're flustered and we're trying to do so much and it's like you said,
It's
very
expensive, very expensive. A lot of things that I've thought about as you're just talking. So one is having some conversations. Like, this is maybe advice for club directors or even high school coaches that are helping, or recruiting directors, right? Because there are recruiting, like individual recruiting directors. The conversations need to happen earlier. I think, you're having these conversations maybe in May and June as some interest is maybe coming in. I almost think there needs to be a more general conversation in like the January and February, so that you can map out your summer a little bit more. You can think about, are these realistic? Are these, what schools are out there that are really going to fit your profile? And the next question, like there were a lot of questions, because I actually did this before I got back into college coaching. I did the recruiting director role, and I had these set questions, like very simple ones. One is, how far do you want to go from home? Because we can't even start thinking about anything else until you really think about, do you want to be within a driving distance? Are you okay with flights? Do you want to go to the West Coast? You need to have those conversations first. The next is, what academically are you interested in studying? Are you general education? Do you know what you really want? Are you, science-based? Are you English-based? What interests? And the thing is, I changed my major 2 or 3 times in college, so I still didn't know what I wanted to do. But so you have to figure out, major wise, what do you need? Like, are you going to a very small liberal arts school where you're not going to have as many options? Or do you need to pick something that might be a little bit bigger so that you do have options and can change your mind? The third and most, probably the most important question is the financial piece of it. Is you really have to take the athletic scholarship out of it and then have a realistic conversation with, players and parents about what the financial situation is for these families. And I also think, and this is my advice, is trying to take a look so that your daughter does not graduate with $100,000 to $150,000 in student debt. College has now gotten to be out of control. There is, I thought maybe COVID would, the glass ceiling would burst, but apparently it didn't. So, unfortunately, there are some universities that are pricing themselves out. There are some universities that just maybe don't offer as much financial aid as some others. There's universities that offer merit aid. There's some that don't. So it's really doing your research of like, what is the package going to be, and what number do you need to get to? And then once you start to have some of those conversations, then you can talk about level of play and have some real conversations. But until you answer those three questions, I think that then can steer you towards what you should be looking at. There's thousands of players playing lacrosse. And the top group, so when you look at the top 20, okay, so if they each take 10, that's only 200 players. Where do the rest of those couple thousand go? So again, they're always, the UNCs, the Marylands, the Northwesterns, BCs, they're always going to get, a lot of kids to come to their camp. And if you're in that top group, then it'll be easy and they're going to see you. But if you're not, and you're in the middle group and you're trying to figure out where to go, that's when you need to have those realistic conversations of, where should I really be looking? What should I be doing, to make this work for me, for my family, and to give me the best chance to be seen at a program where I'm really going to excel.
Well, and do you know the exact number of D1? I feel like it's like 100 and for
I
female.
think we're up to 180.
Is amazing. I mean, there are schools that I am like, what? I've never even,
I
and yet
know.
like that's what you're saying. There is a lot of opportunity. We just have to really kind of do some of our homework and our research to find what's out there and what will meet our profile.
I don't know if Chat GPT or my little AI is correct. It says 126 Division One women's. And then I think Division Three has like 300 and some. So
Right.
again,
And
when you're
I feel like two is like building, like even
who's
more.
building? They have, I thought they had like 75. Again, general numbers. But there's a lot of. Oh, now I see another one that says 133. So who knows? So.
Yeah, I definitely think it. I mean, I feel like it's over 150 the last time I checked, but I think more and more colleges are putting finances into their sports and offering girls lacrosse and but there is opportunity, and like doing your research and your homework is very important. I mean, we've heard that before on this podcast, but that's something that we need to do. And as you said, how far away do you want to be from home? Academics. I mean, these are like my 26 team. Wow, just smart group of girls, and shooting for the stars and academically, and not water that down because you want to just play at lacrosse. So always looking at your academics, and then financial piece is a huge part. So kind of getting towards wrapping up, but three things players should prioritize. Always put you on the spot, but
Well, I think it depends on, are you thinking from a recruiting perspective or just like in general
in general.
for, in general, stick work. I think we're a very fortunate sport that you might not be the fastest player on the field, but if you have incredible hands and if you can catch anything that comes to you, if you are able to release the ball at any point, stick work is the number one thing that players should be looking at. So, I know everyone loves the wall, but the problem is if you don't have the right mechanics, sometimes getting on the wall and just repeatedly having like a pushing mentality isn't necessarily going to get you, the stick work that you need. So if you can go out with a friend, if you can even, the backstop on your, at your house, but anything where you're really changing levels, where you're using your full body. I think, too often we do a lot of one-handed stuff, but we also really talk about how much your shoulders and your hips are involved in the throwing, catching, aspect of things. So I also encourage players to stand in front of the mirror. And everybody has, typically great mechanics. with their dominant hand, and all of a sudden they switch to their non-dominant and their mechanics don't match. So I even said, just stand in front of a mirror and see if you can't work on making sure that your mechanics match on both sides. But if you can catch and throw, even if you're a step slower, it does put you in at an advantage. So I think stick work first and foremost. I think second is also, just the, and I know everybody talks about this, but like the hustle play, and like thinking about how you can, come up with a ground ball or come up like the 50-50 balls for me, are one that really stand out, when you're in the recruiting process of, is this kid really fighting? Is she getting in there? Is she looking for that opportunity to, attack the ball? So I think that's another, 'cause I can't teach that. I'm going to tell you right now, I've tried in my 20 years of coaching. I've literally tried, but I say it all the time. It's easier to rein somebody back in than it is to, kick their butt and try and get them to go harder. So I think, just encouraging like that competition side of things is probably, the second most. And the third, just showing a little bit of personality. And that can be like, it can be a range, right? So it could be that you're somebody who is really outgoing and is, celebrating all the little things, and or it could just be, that you're quietly, being a great teammate on the side. It doesn't always have to be, you can't have all alphas on a team. You just can't. You have to have a couple betas. You have to make sure that you have followers. And we talk a lot about this even with our team, like, are you a leader or are you a follower? And it doesn't, if you're a leader, you can still be a follower. If you're a follower, you can still be a leader at moments. But we can't have all leaders and we can't have all followers. So it really is important to find kind of that balance and that mix. But personality doesn't have to just be loud and obnoxious. Personality can also be kindness and empathy in, even being able, I pay attention if you go up and like hug your parents after. Like those moments matter, and to, the family atmosphere that we're trying to create. We talk a lot about how much the parents are important in this process. So I think being able to show that too, like all of those things are really important. So stick work, I think 50-50, and really attacking, and you can be a very quiet kid and still attack 50-50 balls, and it's not, and then really being able to show just a little bit of that personality, and in whatever capacity that is, whether it's loud and a little boisterous, or if you're just, quiet but also very kind, and being able to again articulate some things. Like in the recruiting process, it is, we love talking to the girls. I love having conversations. And I will say, like in my notes, as we've had conversations, like I just really enjoyed speaking with her. And it wasn't because she was, funny or because she was, aggressive. It was, again, the kindness piece, and just having a little personality, can make a big difference.
Well, it's good to hear you want to encourage the girls, to be themselves. And I think, the more and more we have kids with screen time, and like you want to be able to engage as a kid and show who you are through the process, because I think that's a huge piece of what you're recruiting. I mean, is what kind of kid am I bringing into my amazing culture that I'm trying to cultivate, and you don't want anything disrupting that, right? I mean, you're trying to, but I like that you said too, like the balance of the alpha and the follower, or just like everybody is different and unique, and embracing that, I think, is really kind of how it works. So, well, thank you. I love all three of those things, and do think they're very important. How about, these are a few personal questions. When you're not coaching, what is Coach Teeters doing?
Hanging with my kids. I, try to spend as much time as I can with them. They, during season especially, I know that I spend more time with the team than I do my own family. So I definitely try to do things. So like my daughter, has horseback riding this afternoon, so I'll take her to that. And I missed last Saturday. I made sure it was a priority. I missed Saturday's recruiting event. I went Friday and Sunday so that I could go to my kids' swim meet. So I definitely love spending time with my family, and that's extended family. So I've got siblings in the area. My mom is here. My husband's family is around. So a lot of family time. And then I cannot wait to get to the beach. That is like I'm counting down August 3rd.
Me
I can't get there fast enough. So I'm gonna try and go to the beach. And right now, that is my two priorities, is spending some time with my family and getting some downtime at the beach. So those will be my hobbies for now. I said I need to actually pick up another hobby. But right now I've got enough juggling that
Don't
I'm
say
just gonna stick
pickleball.
with
Like
this.
everybody's doing
I
pickleball. But I like
love
what you're
playing
saying.
pickleball.
I feel like everybody should listen to a coach that's actually going to say like just a little bit of downtime, because that's going to make them a better coach to have a human life and be able to spend time with family and be able to take a minute. And I do think the recruiting calendar has maybe hopefully helped you all with that, where there's what they call a blackout or
Oh,
whatever.
yeah, the recruiting shutdown.
Is that
Yeah.
period where you can actually have a minute to yourself and your family. Coaches give relentlessly, and so yeah, so excited for you with that. Okay, these are just a fun few quick things as we wrap this up, and I'm so thankful for your time, and I love everything we've talked about. But what is your favorite book?
Oh, that's a
And you
great
can
question.
say past
I
whatever you.
know. Well, I'm trying to think, because I've been doing a lot of, I just don't, I the Libby app. So I've been going through, and I listen, whether it's listening to podcasts or doing all my audiobooks. I listened to The Anxious Generation just recently, and I felt like I needed to read it not only for like my understanding of my players more, but I read it also for my own children. And that one has recently stuck out in my mind as one that I would encourage everyone to read,
Okay.
especially, people that have young children who are, we have, I don't know, the tablets for the kids. And I realize now they don't use them a lot. Actually, the only time that they really use them is in the second half of the American games, because my husband wants to be able to watch the second half of the game. So the first half,
Here, take this.
they're not allowed to have them. And then the second half, they have their tablet time. But we have tried to definitely reduce. We're lucky we are on an acre. Our neighbors have an acre and they have young children, and the amount of just playtime that they have. But The Anxious Generation, there was two main things that kind of came out of that book. One was reducing, obviously, screen time. And it was this idea of, basically under parenting in like the virtual world and over parenting in the real world. That was one of the greatest takeaways that I had. And I grew up in a time where, I was one of seven kids, and my mom was always like, just go play in the neighborhood. And we would leave and come back at dinner time, or even like, we were playing nighttime games, ghosts in the graveyard, and doing things like that in the neighborhood. And I think that has kind of gone by the wayside a little bit. So we are trying to get back into, letting the kids play and having a little bit more independence. Letting my girls cross the street, to go to the bus stop, was a big one of like, they can do this. This is fine. I don't have to stand there with them. They know how to. So, I think that was a really good one for me when I was, as I'm obviously as a young, I have young children, and how do I transition them to be more independent? But then also understanding that this generation that I'm coaching right now is completely glued to their phones. And I sit here and it's sitting right next to me. But how they talk a lot about that, of like the screen-based childhood and how much they rely on that. And I talk a lot, even with my team, about the comparison in social media and just how. So if I can encourage anyone, and this is even like my mom, I told her she needs to read it. The Anxious Generation is a great book to, I would encourage every parent to read.
I love that. And I grew up where you sent your dog out in the neighborhood. Like we would call our dog, we would just yell the name like through the neighborhood, and their dog would come running. And it was Like, I can't imagine doing that now with my dogs, but
Yeah.
and kids, like, we were out all day and
Yeah.
big neighborhood of kids, and so I kind of encouraged my kids to do the same growing up, and we have a great neighborhood where there's lots of kids. So, but my neighbor said one time, she's like, "Oh, those McCormicks, they're out there even if it's 20 below." And I'm like, "Oh gosh, do I send my kids?" I guess I do. Like, just
It's only gonna make them tougher.
exactly. Well, okay. So, what favorite movie?
Oh, okay. So I have three. I can't decide which one is my favorite, and they're all very different. So, and they're old school. So, Dirty Dancing, Top Gun, and this one is one that I think people won't, but Scream. So
Oh.
those three are my three favorite movies. But then my last and all-time favorite, and actually my son is named after the dad in the movie, is The Family Stone. I watch it religiously throughout the holiday. I watch it outside of the holiday. Thanksgiving night, I come home and I watch it. Christmas Eve, I come home no matter what it is, it goes on. And the dad in the movie was Kelly. And my son's name is Kelly. So that is probably like that's number one, but it's also a holiday movie. So, and then I have those three that I talk on, Dirty Dancing and Scream. And I don't know why, but those three are my favorite.
That's amazing. No, Family Stone. We also watch Thanksgiving night, and it's one of our favorites as well. Again, what a great group of family. I love that movie as well. All right, so favorite food.
Oh, I'm a steak and potatoes girl. So if I can have a nice medium rare steak, that's what I'm going with.
Right.
And sous
Okay.
vide and like the ANOVA, my husband has like perfected how to make a steak. And actually, I think that his steaks are better than when we go out.
That's awesome. I know COVID has turned my husband into an air chef, and I am all for it. He's amazing. Okay, favorite animal.
Oh, a dog. I can't even like my mom's dog is right here, but I had golden retrievers growing up. My first dog was a golden doodle, Kane, named after Casey Kane, a NASCAR driver. And but I'm a dog person through and through.
Yep, I love them too. All right, favorite, last one, favorite place.
The Outer Banks.
Outer Banks. And is that where you're headed in August?
No, my mom got a beach house just recently. She's a couple miles off of Bethany Beach, and a great community down there. So we're gonna take advantage, and we're gonna go down there for about 2 weeks in August. But the Outer Banks is my happy place. There's just I've been going since I was a kid. There's only been a few summers that we've missed. We're gonna do Disney, I think, this December. So we decided instead of doing the Outer Banks, we're gonna take advantage of my mom's beach house and do Disney in December, but we will be back to the Outer Banks. But there is, I don't know what it is. There's something getting up at 3:30 in the morning and leaving to go and crossing that bridge to get over, onto that strip where it is my happy place.
Well, for sure. I've been there a few times and I get that too. And there's like less civilization, I think, than like the Bethany or the Rehoboth and of course Ocean City, Maryland. Well, oh my gosh, I've enjoyed our time so much. Thank you so much for this time. As I know, you're coming off a super busy season, so thanks for making the time. And I know that it'll bless everyone listening. So thank you, Coach Teeters, and good luck in your up and coming season. It'll be here before we know it.
I know. Well, Robin, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed being on today.
Absolutely. Thank you.